George?
Marshall.
So we're ready to proceed with the second matter on our oral argument calendar this morning. The panel has been reconstituted, and I'm just saying this for the record. It's obvious to everyone in the courtroom. So counsel for our second case can certainly take the seat at counsel table, and we'll proceed. Second matter on our case is A18-1694. It's Lindsay Olson, respondent, versus John Lesh. So now I believe I saw Attorney Tanik. So maybe just took a brief break. I'll have the marshal check. No hurry, Mr. Tanik. We knew you were here. So I'll make just a few very brief remarks. Mr. Tanik, we certainly appreciate that you're here for the first case and second case on our argument calendar. You can see the panel's been reconstituted. For the record, I did call the case number and the case title. Now, with regard to the argument, I think you're both experienced and know how we do things in the court, but I just want to say welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We do look forward to our conversation today. Just to a few things so that the argument proceeds more smoothly, and you're probably aware of it, but you can adjust the podium and move the microphone around. It helps us maintain our oral recorded record, as well as it helps us hear you. So take whatever time you need to make those adjustments, set your materials out. And then before you start your remarks, if you would identify yourself for the record, including you, Mr. Tanik, even though you argued the first case, so identify yourself for the record as well as the client that you represent. So with that, counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Marshall Tanik. I am the attorney representing the appellant in this case, Representative John Lesh of Minnesota House of Representatives. As the court is aware, this is a defamation case brought by the current city attorney of the city of St. Paul against Representative Lesh. The basis of the case is a letter that Representative Lesh wrote to the incoming mayor of St. Paul, Mayor Carter, shortly after Mayor Carter took office last January, a year ago in January. The letter has two overarching themes to it. One part of the letter is, and Mr. Lesh wrote the letter on his state representative stationery, and he was writing to the mayor shortly after the mayor took office. There are two, as I said, overarching themes of the letter. In the letter, Representative Lesh kind of welcomes Mayor Carter into office and offers him some guidance and advice about lobbying at the legislature. Representative Lesh was the head of the St. Paul delegation in the legislature, still is. At the time, he was the lead on the Data Practices and Civil Law Committee. Since then, as a result of last November's election, he is now a chair of a very significant Judiciary and Finance and Civil Law Committee. But at the time, he was the lead and the head of the coalition dealing with data practice and civil law. And he was giving the mayor some suggestions and tips regarding lobbying and representation before the legislature based upon his experience.
So, Mr. Tanik, let me ask a question about that letter.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the big questions is whether or not we look at the letter as a whole. Do we say, kind of, is this letter as a whole? Does that fall within the sphere of legitimate legislative activity? Or do we look at portions of it? Do we say, well, you know, this is certainly, you know, protected under either speech or debate or immunity, but not this part? The respondent in their briefs pointed to the Doe versus McQuillan to say, you know, case to say you can look at portions. What is your perspective on that?
I think the letter has to be looked at as a whole in the context of the letter as a whole. And this letter is replete from beginning to end with matters relating to Representative Lesh's legislative activities. As we know, there are two issues in the case: the speech and debate clause under Article 4, Section 10. which as the courts have construed it both in Minnesota and the federal version of it in the federal constitution, is going well beyond just what is said in the chambers of the legislature. It's activities that are relating to legislative activities that a legislator may do, which are quite broad.
So
this letter is replete
with, interesting
to
use the term activities, because a statute and the case law refers to legislative duties.
Correct.
Is there a difference?
Well, the case law, some of the case law talks about, uses the word actions, legislative actions, relates to legislative actions. The case law refers to that. The
You're talking about federal case law here?
Well, the federal case law, yes. Most of the cases, many of the cases have been decided under federal case law. And the reason for that, I think, is because many of the states that have speech or debate clauses model them after the federal case law, and the courts look at to the federal case law. We have two issues here. One is the Article 4, Section 10, this, our constitutional provision, but there also is a broader statute, 540.13, and that's the statute that provides immunity for employees of the legislature as well for any acts done in pursuance of legislative duties. That statute is broader than the constitutional provision. It's broader in terms of language, it's broader in terms of scope, and it's broader in terms of purpose. There is no need, the respondent in this case maintains that the statute is parallel to and identical to the constitutional provision. It's not. There's no need to have a statute just to parallel what's in the state constitution. That would make it redundant.
There may not be a need, but what about the Supreme Court's interpretation in Zuts of the constitutional provision, saying that the constitutional provision, I've got this correct, grants absolute privilege from defamation liability to members of the state Senate and House of Representatives in the discharge of their official duties?
Well,
Do you think that's about the same as the statute, or do you see a difference there?
Well, I think the cases have looked at a variety of activities that take place beyond just official duties. The official duties are tied into what legislators do in order to undertake and transact those official duties. Legislators talk to people. They gather facts. They gather evidence. They gather information.
And I won't quibble with you, Mr. Tanik, that legislative activities are broader,
right,
than legislative duties.
Right.
So that gets back to my original question. You were using the phrase that this is a legislative activity.
But in order to carry out legislative duties, an individual has to undertake activities that related to those duties. And in response to the question about looking at the letter as a whole, I think you do have to view the context of the letter. And this letter is replete with matters relating to legislative duties as well as legislative activities from beginning to end. Sure.
So the legislative duty in the letter is what?
The legislative duties include dealing with matters that come before the legislature in terms of legislation. And that's where the first part of the letter talks about the lobbying.
That's one paragraph on the first page.
Well, it's a little bit more than that. He talks about he says we want to have a conversation about the upcoming legislative session. He urges the mayor to work with us and tell us about your lobbying team. He asks who's on the lobbying team. And then at the end of the letter, he comes back to that concept. The end of the letter, Representative Lesch again refers to he looks forward to working with the mayor during this legislative session and expresses a willingness to work with him on legislative matters of concern to St. Paul, where he's the head of the delegation. So the letter from beginning to end is imbued with Representative Lesch seeking and offering guidance to seeking input from the mayor and offering guidance to him on how to deal with the legislature. There's a second, yes, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Tanik, when we look at these cases, including kind of the guidance in the federal system, don't we also have to take into consideration that we're dealing with a part-time legislature here? You know, where the cases, you know, from the federal cases are dealing mostly with people in Congress who, that's their full-time job, and maybe they get even a little more leeway in what their duties are. When here we have, you know, someone who part-time is in the legislature and part-time is a lawyer. Does that inform our thinking? That's my first question. My second, just to give you time to address them both, is, you know, why wouldn't the Supreme Court's decision in Hutchison versus Proxmire, you know, really direct the outcome in this case? I mean, if the speech or debate clause doesn't protect something in a press release, in a newsletter issued by someone in Congress, wouldn't it certainly not protect this?
Well, let me address both questions. First of all, is the part-time, full-time nature. I don't know if any of the cases get into that dichotomy, but I think
But you'll acknowledge it's a difference.
It is. Yes, it is. And I think it cuts in favor of extending the privilege rather broadly because of the problems of dealing with part-time legislators being sued for defamation or other kind of torts and imposes a significant burden on them. The Hutchinson case talks about that. The Hutchinson case refers to the burden that's imposed upon legislators if they're subject to the threat or actuality of lawsuits in carrying out their duties or activities. In this case, with part-time legislators, I think that that consideration is even more paramount. And there's even greater need to give a broader privilege or a broad privilege to legislators in order for them to carry out their work without the fear of a substantial and expensive litigation brought against them.
On the other hand, isn't the other side of that we are cloaking in immunity, kind of something that a legislature would be doing purely in their, you know, in their private side of their world? And Mr. Representative Lutch's case in his private practice, since this really related a lot to his work for the city attorney's office.
Well, he commented on his work with the city attorney's office in the connection with the importance of the second theme of his letter. I said one theme was seeking out some guidance and help and offering help in dealing with legislative issues in the lobbying part of the letter. But a second theme of the letter, and this comes from Representative Lesh Roll as the lead on data practices, is his concern about transparency in the hiring process that Mayor Carter had undertaken when he hired the city attorney. And Mr. Lesh, a former city attorney, commented anecdotally on his experience in the city attorney's office and then went on to critique Mayor Carter in how he did not comply or at least didn't conform with the spirit and the law of the Data Practices Act in how the hiring process went forward with the city attorney's office. And Representative Lesh commented upon his disappointment on the lack of transparency in how the city attorney was hired. And then he commented upon his own role in the city attorney's office. But the focus of that part of the letter was on the mayor's not being, at least what Representative Lesh felt, was transparent in complying with the data practices provisions. And Representative Lesh said that the finalists should have been made public and known to the public before a decision was made. And he was referencing there, of course, the Data Practices Act, which requires finalists for certain positions to be made public.
Upon request.
Yeah, upon request. But so his concern there was whether there was compliance with the Data Practices Act. He was coming at it from the standpoint of his role in the legislature as lead person on the Data Practices Act, and that was his concern. And he concluded then by asking for additional data practice information from the mayor.
But isn't that really his concern about the Data Practices Act? Isn't what he's really doing similar to lobbying the executive branch, which the Supreme Court says clearly isn't protected by the speech and debate clause?
Well, he wasn't lobbying the executive branch, but part of the legislator's duties and part of their activities is to not only to pass laws, but to get information about how laws are actually being implemented in the real world. And monitoring how laws are being implemented is one way that legislators gain information to use in the legislative process. So it's not a matter of...
case, Mr. Tanak, in which an individual legislator's decision to go out and investigate compliance is held to be within a speech and debate clause, that activity?
I'm sorry.
I mean, I know there are cases where a committee is investigating. Is there any case that that we could look to that would tell us that a legislator's activities in himself deciding to undertake compliance investigation of an agency is protected?
Well, I don't know why it wouldn't be. I don't know if there's a case in point, but it's part of the legislator's duties to, part of the legislator's duties is to gather information in order to be effective in the legislature. The legislative process doesn't just involve sitting in the chambers of the building across the street and punching buttons yes or no and voting on matters.
I'm just looking for the best case that tells us that gathering information falls within the scope.
Well, the Thillens case, that's a Seventh Circuit case, refers to the lobbying role, but that's also an information gathering role. The role of lobbyists is to provide information. Lobbyists do a lot of other things, sometimes not always desirable, but lobbyists provide information to legislators. Legislators interact with people that provide information to them in order for them to make determinations as to what kind of laws they should propose, what kind of amendments to laws should be made. The Hutchinson case that Judge Yesen asked about is quite different. In the Hutchinson case, there was a news release issued by Senator Proxmire and newsletters that were critical and defamatory of a particular individual, and that's not what that's not what Representative Lesch did here. He didn't go out and hold some kind of press conference. He made a very private, and he framed the letter as a private confidential letter because he didn't want to inflame the situation. He wanted to give some guidance to the mayor and get some input back from the mayor. So the fact that he used the word personal and confidential doesn't denigrate the point that he was engaged in legislative duties within the ambit of what legislators do. Yes.
But isn't the defamation, I mean, you said he didn't issue a press release, and certainly that's very true, but he was writing a letter to this person's boss. Isn't that kind of even, more of a concern than what was happening in Hutchinson?
Well, the concern in Hutchinson is a widespread communication to the public at large, and some of the other cases that have been cited here by respondent are cases in which individuals, legislative elected officials, took action to attempt to subvert a person's job opportunities, attempt to prevent an appointment. There's cases in which there was an attempt to influence how the law was being executed. There are cases in which there was attempts to subvert a decision-making process before it was made. That's not this case. The city attorney had already been appointed. Mr. Representative Lesch wasn't trying to prevent that appointment. He wasn't trying to subvert it. He wasn't trying to interfere with it. He was critical of it because it didn't comply with what he felt was the spirit and letter of the law.
Why?
And he wanted to call that to the mayor's attention for future purposes.
So I'm looking at the letter. Why is a description of his, however you want to characterize it, his views about that particular finalist, how does that actually serve the purpose of determining whether the mayor's office was compliant with the Data Practices Act?
Well, I think what he was pointing out, in the letter, Mr. Lesch points out that there was a need for transparency, and he said the finalists should have been identified beforehand, and the implication is had the finalists been identified beforehand, some information that the mayor didn't know may have been able to surface that may have had some effect on the decision-making process. So what Representative Lesch was trying to do is say, in the future, you should be more transparent so the public knows who's prospect for appointment beforehand so they can weigh in on it. He was weighing in after the fact. He wasn't trying to undo the appointment.
But how does the particular finalist and his views about a particular finalist help inform whether there was transparency overall in the process?
Well, he referred to that as an example of what happened here, but that's what happened here and why it shouldn't have happened. And had the mayor been compliant with what he felt was the spirit and letter of the law, this may not have happened because this particular individual may have had a record in the past that would have been unfavorable to her appointment. But that's the purpose of the immunity clause, is to prevent the phraseology used in Article 1, Section 10 is that action of the legislature shall not be questioned, and that's the purpose of that. So they don't have to say, why'd you say this, why'd you say that, why'd you write this? If there's immunity, it doesn't matter because the immunity provides coverage or applies to the entire letter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tanick. And, of course, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose. Take your time.
Do you see it? It's right around.
Should
here,
be.
Right?
Yeah, should be right in front. No.
Does that bring it down?
Yes, it will bring it down.
Sorry.
The marshal can help you out.
I apologize.
It's better to be comfortable before we start.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, okay, got it.
Thanks. I feel like I'm working my remote at home or something. Sorry.
I always need help.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Lisa Lamb Bachman, and I'm appearing on behalf of the respondent, Ms. Lindsay Olson, and who is seated in the gallery to my left today. Point of clarification with regard to how this case has been brought. Although my client is the St. Paul City Attorney, she's brought this claim in her personal capacity, and I just want to clarify that for the record. This is not something on behalf of the City of St. Paul or in her capacity as the City of St. Paul's attorney. The issue in this case, obviously, is whether or not legislative immunity applies either under the speech or debate clause in the Minnesota Constitution or under the statutory provision of Minnesota Statute Section 540.13. I would point out, and this is in response to one of the questions earlier from the panel, that the statutory provision focuses primarily on duties as opposed to legislative activities. So if the court were to decide for some reason to not interpret the speech or debate clause or to provide legislative immunity under the speech or debate clause, I would argue that under the statutory provision, there is certainly much doubt as to whether or not the appellant was acting or was carrying out some duty, legislative duty, when he sent this defamatory letter to Mayor Carter. Rather, I would argue that he was acting in his personal capacity, and there is absolutely nothing in the letter itself. If we really dig down and examine the language in the letter, there's nothing that suggests that this is related in any way to any sort of legitimate legislative activity or carrying out some legislative duty. And finally, this reference to wanting to shed light on the Sunshine Laws or making sure that Mayor Carter is aware of what his obligations are to follow the Minnesota Data Practices Act, that's a ruse. That does not convert the conduct in this case of appellant into some sort of immune legislative activity.
So I just want to make sure, at a ground level, if Representative Lesh had said this on the House floor, that would be protected by the speech and debate clause. Whether it would be good politically or not is beside the point. That would be protected. Do you agree with that?
I agree.
So why is it so different that he put this in a letter on House stationery and said exactly the same thing that he could have said and have it protected on the House floor?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think it goes to sort of a subversive bullying tactic on his part. He wants to now explain what the purpose of his conduct was. He's trying to explain to this court what his intent and his motive was. But it's clear that what he was really trying to do was to undermine the appointment of Ms. Olson and to defame her to Mayor Carter. And he does this in a way, he does this by asserting that it's a private and confidential matter. He doesn't make any reference to the fact that this has something to do with an investigation that he's completing as a consequence of his legislative activities or duties. He, in fact, if we look at the closing remarks of the letter on addendum page 16, he is mentioning to Mayor Carter that he's not bringing this to the press, and he's not involving the St. Paul delegation.
But I'm just keep going back to it would be protected if he said it on the House floor. We are supposed to, if we follow the federal guidance, broadly interpret this as far as protecting legislatures, the speech and debate clause. Why shouldn't that end this discussion?
That's correct, that it should be applied broadly. But we can also go back and take a look at the case law, the historical case law, the discussions in Johnson and U.S. v. Johnson and then also U.S. v. Brewster. What's the purpose? What's the purpose of providing this immunity? And initially, it was to prevent intimidation by the executive branch and to provide some accountability before a possible hostile judiciary. That's what the case discussion was in U.S. v. Johnson. And then it was clarified somewhat later in U.S. v. Brewster, indicating that the legislative privilege is not intended for personal and private benefit of a member of Congress, but rather to preserve and protect the integrity of the legislative process. So the court has to examine whether or not this letter falls within that legislative process in order to fulfill the purpose of the speech or debate clause immunity. So the purpose here is not what he's trying to argue now. He has to say that he was trying to see if St. Paul was conforming with the Minnesota Data Practices Act or if there was some issue with the Sunshine Law. He has to say that now. That's the only way he can explain this defamatory comment and letter to this court. The courts in many other cases have provided some guidance with respect to what is considered a legislative duty, and I believe it's in Butler. The Butler case provides many examples of what is considered legislative activity versus what's not considered legislative activity. And one of the most important things that's not considered legislative activity is trying to influence a member of the executive branch. And I think, you know, sometimes when it's so clear, there isn't a lot of extra explanation needed. And in this case, it's very clear that that is exactly what the appellant was attempting to do. If he was so concerned about...
Going back to one of Mr. Tanik's points, though, I mean, and I would understand that much, that would be much clearer to me if it was before the appointment was made, that he was trying to influence the appointment. But your client was appointed.
Appointed but not sworn in.
Is that part of the record?
I don't know that it is, Your Honor, but I want to clarify that point. And here's the other piece of this. We need to look at the appellant's language and really focus in on the appellant's language. If he was so concerned about the selection process, he doesn't really ask anything about the selection process. He focuses and hones in on Ms. Olson. He doesn't ask for any information as it relates to the slate of candidates. He doesn't ask for any disclosure of who those finalists were. He doesn't ask for their qualifications or any information as it relates to those candidates. All he wants is this information related to Ms. Olson because he, in his personal capacity, disagrees with the fact that she was appointed and she was chosen. And then here's the other point I want to make on this. I think this is really important. It's one thing to make a request for information. I have no problem with that, and I don't think that that would be an issue. But to defame an individual, the subject of that request for information, that's where it crosses the line. So if what he's trying to argue is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, here's a question. It's the way you're phrasing your argument. It sounds to me like you are definitely embracing the position that some topics included in Mr. Lesch's letter may have been part of his legislative duties, but other portions were not, which I think goes back to Judge Jessen's early question to appellant's counsel, asking whether do we examine this letter in total or do we examine it in part? And perhaps some portions of it, you know, if they also included defamatory material, would receive from some protection or immunity. I mean, is that true? Is that your view that we examine it part by part?
I think you should examine it part by part, and I think that if you did examine it part by part, you'd come to the same conclusion that this is not within his legislative duties. And I think if we step back and we want to approach this on a really broad basis, what the appellant is asking this court to do.
We don't do that with speech and debate on the House floor. Again, going back to another earlier question, which is, you know, if there would be, I don't know if we want to call it blanket immunity, but very broad immunity for statements made on the House floor.
Right.
Suggesting that when statements are made in a letter, even a letter with official stationery, it should be different, and if so, why?
I think you're giving legislators a license to run.
Well, now you're making a policy
roughshod
argument.
Well.
And we need to interpret this with some, you know, perspective toward either, if we're going to make a difference between the statute and the Constitution, some basis on the language as well as obviously the...
Well, so if we look at the statute again, we're having to take a look at whether or not he has, in the course of this communication, whether or not he was carrying out any of his legislative duties. I disagree that that is what has occurred in this particular case. And the reason I say that is there's nothing in this letter that indicates that he's conducting an investigation of the St. Paul City Attorney's Office, the City of St. Paul in their selection process and their compliance with sunshine laws or the Minnesota Data Practices Act. He's not indicating that there was some committee formed to determine whether or not the City of St. Paul is in compliance with the sunshine laws or the Minnesota Data Practices Act. In other words, if he had made a reference, if the appellant had made a reference to some legislative duty or activity, or a duty that he needed to somehow gather this information as a part of his legislative duties or to fulfill those, I might be having a different take on this. But the bottom line is, this was done in his personal capacity, and it's very clear. And for him to then put it on his state legislative letterhead, that does not create immunity. And for him to make one general remark at the very beginning about lobbying efforts on behalf of the city of St. Paul, and then somehow not tie that to this other conduct, which is the primary basis of the letter, is disingenuous, and it does not meet those requirements that he would need to satisfy in order for this court to determine that he has statutory immunity, and I would argue even further, or immunity under the Constitution.
Do you have a perspective, Ms. Buckman, on the question I asked Mr. Tanik earlier, which is when we are looking at interpreting the, I think, the sphere of legislative either duties or activities that we ought to, and thinking about the case, federal case law, that we also ought to be reflecting on the fact that we have a part-time legislature?
I mean, I think it should apply either way, you know. But to me, it appears as though he was doing this in his personal capacity. I mean, that's one of our primary arguments. So I guess I wouldn't really have a strong belief on that one way or the other. I think if there's immunity that applies, we have to focus on the conduct. And that's what all of the case law suggests, whether or not it's part-time or full-time, focus on the conduct that's in question, not his intent or motive, which may be determined at some point based upon whether or not he's full-time or part-time. So one of the other things I did want to focus on, we were talking about this issue with regard to his personal capacity. Again, he stamped it as personal and confidential. He indicates at the very end of the letter that he's hoping that they can resolve this internally. And this is the selection of Ms. Olson. He's unhappy with it, he's dissatisfied with it, and he is trying to influence the final decision or outcome. And there's a couple of other cases that are instructive on this. We've cited both of them in our brief, but Hartley v. Fine and Chastain v. Sundquist both deal with not providing immunity to a legislator in their with regard to their actions when it came to influencing or attempting to influence a member of the executive branch.
So, counsel, I think I understand your argument that if we look at this letter in whole or in part, we're going to reach the conclusion, this is your position, I think, that Mr. Lesch was not engaged in some sort of a legislator's investigation of Sunshine Law compliance or data practices of the city of St. Paul.
Correct.
I have that right?
Correct.
Okay. So, let me just ask you a hypothetical. What if that was explicit in the letter? Would then a letter of that sort, even if it contained defamatory material, be protected by either the constitutional or the statutory provision?
I'm going to answer with the classic lawyer answer, it depends. I think there needs to be more information in that fact scenario to be able to give you an answer. And I say that because, you know, if the reality is...
To be a little more blunt, is it a legislator's... Is it a legislator's act within the scope of his official duties if that legislator is, in fact, investigating compliance with Sunshine Law's data practices?
I think that they could... I think the argument could be made if that was the reference in the letter. But again, I don't know that it's necessary.
I understand you don't think it applies here.
Okay.
I'm just trying, obviously our decision could have an impact on other cases.
Right.
And so one of the things that's difficult for us is to articulate, you know, the scope of legislative immunity. I appreciate the result you want in your case,
right,
but the impact is broader than that.
Well, I think that legislators need to be more clear in their conduct as to whether or not they are carrying out legislative duties or activities. And I think that for this court to conclude that immunity applies, that would have to be spelled out in more detail in the letter. And it certainly was not in this case. And my final point is, if Mr. Lesch, the appellant in this case, is the de facto lead on the data practices, he knows that certain requests need to be directed to certain individuals, in other words, the custodian of the information that he's seeking. So for him to claim that this was a data practices request that he was carrying out as part of his legislative duties, it falls flat. And the reason for that is he submitted it to the mayor as opposed to the city clerk and then didn't submit anything with regard to the Minnesota National Guard or the Army.
Thank you, Ms. Lamb-Bachman. I just want to check with my panel members. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Tanik, you've got 5 minutes for rebuttal.
As you pointed out, Your Honor, counsel concurred, and I pointed this out as well, the constitutional provision, the immunity provision in Article 4, Section 10, is to be construed broadly. That's the starting point. In this case, the suggestion that the letter should be looked at word by word, paragraph by paragraph, belies the notion of construing that privilege broadly, because it would have this court and other courts in other cases cherry-pick particular words, particular statements used by legislators, either on the floor of the legislature or in some other context, and rather than looking at the overall context in which those statements were made. And I think that's a dangerous precedent to set, not only for this court, but for the legislative bodies as well. It also raises some concerns.
What's your rule then, that if there's a letter on stationery, on letterhead, that is necessarily a legislative act?
No, it's not.
I mean, we need to look at the content of the letter to understand whether it's a legislative act.
Of course you do. You have to look at the content.
Right.
But what I am suggesting is that if the overall context of the letter and the overall content of the letter falls within either the statutory or constitutional provision, you need not pick apart particular words in the letter and say, well, this letter falls within the immunity. However, there's a few words here that may be defamatory or may be tortious, and therefore we're going to remove that broad immunity because of a particular passage in a letter. If the letter itself conforms and merits immunity, then everything in the letter is immune, not some things. And it raises...
Right, if everything in a letter relates to a legislator, or whatever the standard is.
Well, I don't know that everything has to, Your Honor. I think I don't think everything has to relate to it. If the letter as a whole is within the duties or activities of a legislative role, then the immunity applies. One doesn't have to cherry-pick each and every word. I think that raises some significant separation of powers issues as well. In this case, in other cases, you look at the overall content and context of the letter, and if it falls within the immunity, it either is immune or it's not. It's not partially immune. In this case, we maintain that this letter, broadly, with the statutory or constitutional provision broadly construed, is clothed with the legislative immunity. It's not necessary that Representative Lesch be engaged in some kind of official investigation in order to carry out legislative duties. The legislature doesn't have to authorize him go out and investigate data practice violations in the city of St. Paul. Legislators gather information in order to carry out their duties. They gather them in many different ways.
Of the lines of cases that I'm struggling with yeah. your position is the Gavel case, which said that acts done, and I'm paraphrasing it, but acts done in the official capacity of a legislator are not necessarily legislative duties. You know, they did do some line drawing in that
case. They're not automatically. It depends upon what the activity is, what the statements are.
With your theory of the case, your theory of what this letter did, which is, as I understand it, the comments with regard to Ms. Olson, your theory is, well, those were part of Mr. Lesch's obligations to communicate with the city of St. Paul with respect to its compliance with sunshine or data practices or perhaps even the merits of the appointment, that was somehow an act in furtherance of his official duties.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say obligatory to do that, but he was carrying out legislative duties in two respects. He was communicating with Mayor Carter regarding legislative issues, lobbying, the need to identify a lobbying team, and he then went on to talk about his experiences with the Data Practices Act and his concerns about how the mayor had not apparently complied with the letter and spirit of that act, and was pointing out what the law requires for future reference. He wasn't trying to subvert
it in any way. Because those two topics are included in the letter, you think that we should cloak the entire letter?
Well, yes, because the letter falls within the legislative immunity. It falls within the broadly defined duties and activities of a member of the legislature.
So as I hear your argument, you're not claiming that the specific statements about Ms. Olson that she has alleged are defamatory were a particular legislative duty.
No, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. It's whether the letter as a whole falls within the role of a legislator or legislative duties. As Judge Jessen points out, and as counsel agreed, if Mr. Lesch had prepared this document and read it on the floor of the House of Representatives, it would be immune, notwithstanding the fact that one could claim that there was some defamation in the letter.
Well, that's the point of the immunity, is you would otherwise be liable for that defamation, but
right.
We know when you're talking in the well of the
Congress
that you are engaged in a legislative act. You
sure.
don't have to determine whether it is. But
right.
if it's a writing, depending on the content of it, we have to determine whether that writing is, in fact, a legislative act. That's why the content of it, as you know, matters.
I agree that the content matters. It's not content matters, but context matters. The content here, we maintain, does reflect legislative duties, legislative activities, and therefore come within the scope of either the statute, and the court could decide this case on the statute and not have to address the constitutional issues, or the Constitution as well. We maintain the legislative immunity applies here in the case. The decision below should be reversed and the case dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to counsel. This matter has been well briefed and well argued. We appreciate very much your appearing today in court to present us with your thoughts. So with that, our panel is going to be reconstituted before the third matter on the calendar this morning. Oh, I don't think I said this is now submitted to the court for its decision. We will issue a decision within the statutory time frame. Thank you.
All rise.